Good morning. It is Sunday, March 2nd, 2014. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. The 2014 Cow Patty Run is Saturday, March 14th at 5:45 p.m. at Gully Park in Fayetteville. This 5K and 1 mile fun run supports special education projects in Fayetteville schools through the Fayetteville Public Education Foundation. Race registration and details available online at cowpaddyrun.com.
Ahead on this edition of Weekend Ozarks, we meet a cartographer on the Ozark Highlands Trail, just in time for spring hiking season. Plus, we take a Sunday drive to the roadside cafe, the Valley Inn, for a slice of their famous pie.
But first, Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis has a wrap-up of the week's top news in this morning's Week in Review.
The state Supreme Court heard oral arguments Thursday for the state's effort to impose a $1.2 billion fine against Johnson & Johnson. The state alleges the company intentionally hid risks associated with the antipsychotic drug Risperdal, and in the process defrauded the state's Medicaid program and Deceptive Practices Act. Walter Dellinger, former U.S. Solicitor General and Johnson & Johnson representative, disputed evidence of harm.
There's not been a single instance where the Arkansas Medicaid program or the Attorney General's office has ever made a determination that a prescription for Risperdal, written for a participant in and paid by the Arkansas Medicaid program, was medically unnecessary. The ensuing admissions say none were not for a medically accepted indication, none were improperly reimbursed.
But the state's special counsel, David Frederick, argued that sufficient evidence of harm exists.
Every one of the 238,000 prescriptions that were filled without truthful, accurate information about drug risks put a person's life at stake. Now, they complained that $5,000 for putting a person's life at stake, they concede that if it were done once, that would be fine. We'll pay that. It's only when they've done it 238,000 times that somehow that gives rise to a constitutional problem.
Arkansas did not participate in a federal settlement of only $1.39 billion to be dispersed among 45 states. While a few states have also taken their own route, several settled for hundreds of millions of dollars less than Arkansas. Other attorneys general are watching this case, and depending on the outcome, the case may find them assessing different means of agreeing to future settlements with pharmaceutical companies. In other health-related news, Governor Mike Beebe early in the week used a national stage to promote the state's private option expansion of Medicaid. More observers outside Arkansas are examining the unique plan of taking federal Medicaid money to buy private health insurance for poor Arkansans. Speaking to reporters Monday at an event in Washington hosted by Kaiser Health News, the governor spoke of the consequences to the state if funding for the private option isn't passed in the legislature.
I think the more realistic possibility is severe and draconian budget cuts in some essential services is likely to be the result if it didn't pass. But by its very nature, I think that potential harsh remedy may be one of the reasons why Speaker Carter and perhaps others have more optimism about it passing, including me.
The governor has said that an $89 million deficit in his proposed budget would result if the legislature refuses to reauthorize the program. Renewing funding for the program has already been approved by the Arkansas Senate. Though the impasse over continuing the private option does continue in the House, Arkansas legislators say they are closer to finding a way to get the 3/4 supermajority to reapprove the program before the end of the fiscal session. House Speaker Davey Carter says he's been meeting with private option opponents and Department of Human Services officials to find some middle ground to keep the program funded. Speaker Carter says that during the meetings, the issue of setting a specific time frame for people to enroll was raised.
It came out of those discussions. I mean, but again, this entire issue is so complex, not only open enrollment, just all of the things that go involved in health care and private option and dealing with, the Affordable Health Care Act and the mandates that we have. And if you make a decision here on its face, well, that causes... that has other effects.
Carter says amending the private option bill is still off the table, and that changes to the enrollment period would likely have to be handled by DHS and the federal government. Republican State Representative Bruce Cozart, who has been in talks with Carter, says his side wants to pass a state budget before the end of next week. That means the private option will have to be accepted in some form.
Are we going to make the program go away? I doubt it. I doubt if it'll ever go away. But I think we can work on it and tweak it and make it more efficient and maybe fix the problems of the people that are on it that probably shouldn't be on there and maybe get some kind of process going on that.
Cozart says he is still a no vote on the private option, though he also says some of the other 26 opponents may change their minds when a vote is expected early this week. And in business news, a third and what's expected to be the final wave of layoffs at Little Rock-based Axiom were underway this week. As Roby Brock with Talk Business Arkansas explained, it's part of ongoing changes at the company.
The database marketer has been continuing to kind of push to realign its workforce to meet some changing industry demands. Axiom used to have its big bread and butter was from those mailing lists for that direct mail you used to get to your mailbox. That's still the case, but that type of revenue has been on the decline for them as the internet has risen, and they're really having to shift their workforce to provide labor that understands much better how to target people via the internet, via Facebook, via Twitter, and that requires a little bit different skill set than what Axiom's traditionally done.
The cut in labor force is expected to save the company between $20 and $30 million annually. From the Harold and Blanche Kalk News Studio, I'm Timothy Dennis, and this is Weekend Ozarks at Large.
The Red Cross has been offering first aid and CPR certification courses for decades. The agency also provides pamphlets, books, and an app for smartphones with basic first aid information. Now, the Red Cross is extending expertise to pet owners. Ozarks at Large's Emily Gallahan has this report on a new service the Red Cross launched earlier this year.
Sometimes having a pet can seem like a daily struggle. A lot of the worries pet owners have every day are health-related, like did my dog just eat enough chocolate to hurt him, or can my cat's ear infection wait? Well, now there's an app for that. The Pet First Aid application from Red Cross is made for smartphone users with pets. It has a section for both dogs and cats, and even lets you build a profile for your pet specifically. Red Cross communications specialist Rick Harvey says the app is useful for all pet owners.
There's a time that your animal is going to get sick, but what if your pet has some symptoms that you're not familiar with? You need to know what to do, and you need to know what signs to look for to know, okay, can this wait till the next morning when my vet is open, or do I need to drive the extra 20 miles to the animal hospital to get them looked at immediately?
If you think you know how to treat your pet in emergency situations, there may be some you haven't even thought of. For example, if you exercise with your dog, how can you tell if it's dehydrated or if its heart rate is too fast? It might be important to find that information quickly and simply. Rick says this was an important app for the Red Cross to create because of people's love for their pets and because there are so many. Nearly 50% of households in Northwest Arkansas have pets. And for the outdoor ones among them, the unpredictable winter weather we've been having can be an issue.
If it's too cold for you to be outside, then it's too cold for your pet to be outside and when to bring them in. And this app will teach you warning signs to look for if your dog or your cat could possibly get hypothermia and then what to do.
The app can help you find vets or animal hospitals nearby, along with their phone numbers, addresses, and hours, which can be useful even for animals that are already committed to a clinic.
Let's say you're taking a road trip to Florida to go to the beach. And let's say something happens and you're halfway there and your dog is not doing well. You can use your phone and find out where's the closest vet, where's the closest animal hospital to where you are at that particular moment.
And if you need a place to stay on your trip, the app can find which hotels are pet-friendly. It even has information on what can be done with lost or found pets, including links to websites where that information is frequently posted. One way Red Cross is spreading the word is through animal shelters, who encourage anyone adopting dogs, like these you hear at the Fayetteville Animal Shelter, to download the app for reference. Through the Pet First Aid app, the Red Cross is also hoping to help in cases of natural disasters.
You know, history shows that people that have not evacuated during disasters because they didn't want to leave their pets behind. Well, this Red Cross app contains resources to help owners include pets in their emergency action plans.
Along with being helpful for your pet, the app can also be fun for you, with interactive quizzes where you can earn badges and a storytelling section for you to share how it's helped your animal. It's available in the Apple or Android App Store for 99 cents. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Emily Gallahan.
Imagine never being alone ever again. Imagine sharing your innermost thoughts with your best friend, a robot.
When we construct robots, we are changing ourselves. We are changing what we are willing to consider a relationship.
I'm Guy Raz, the promise and the peril of our robot overlords. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
It begins today at noon on KUAF.
This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. Late last month, the University of Arkansas Libraries hosted a forum dedicated to the life of Daisy Bates and to the coverage of civil rights in Arkansas. The forum's participants included Janice Kearney, author of the book Daisy, Between a Rock and a Hard Place, and Gerald Jordan, a professor of journalism at the University of Arkansas. Both are graduates of the U of A, and toward the end of the forum, during a question and answer period, they were asked about their experiences as undergraduate African-American students at a time when the campus had very few students of color.
When I came here in 1966, I have no data, but just what was said, there were about 50 African-American students among an enrollment of 10,000. I mean, we literally all knew one another. We looked to the graduate students for leadership. We applauded the juniors and seniors for perseverance. But for the most part, we were just left alone. It was not openly hostile. It was more, if you go in and sit down in Brough Commons, all the white kids would get up and leave the table. And we soon just turned that into a game. Somebody would say, what time are you going to eat? Oh, about 5. Well, get us a table. So you go in, sit down, everybody get up and leave. And, I mean, it just got to be ridiculous. They didn't do that for very long. They ultimately realized, this is stupid. I'm not leaving just because this guy sat at the end of the table. And, in fact, a couple of kids came up and said, do you mind if I eat with you? So it was, for me, it was almost sort of a live and let live. Roommates would move out and all of the stuff that you expect, but there were no partitions around people in classroom as there was for Silas Hunt. A lot of kids had gone to Central, and Central had been integrated by then, so it was no novel experience for them. Some of the kids who had come from harshly segregated areas of the state would just essentially not speak to you. But, you know, it wasn't like people were throwing things at you or anything like that. Now, I was also fortunate, and Janice might join me in this, in being a journalism major, and it was a tiny department, and they welcomed me. It wasn't as though they recruited me. There was no affirmative action program. There was no American Society of Newspaper Editors initiative to get more African Americans in journalism. I just walked in off the street and they said, welcome. So it was so small that I was welcomed in that environment and encouraged. So that I'll forever be grateful for, because it could have very easily have been one of the other departments where I understood that a lot of my classmates were treated not only with hostility, but, you know, some were even told, you don't belong here. I never got that in Hill Hall, never. So it was kind of a weird and different experience for me there.
I had, overall, I had a really good experience here, but my siblings tell me that I would have a good experience anywhere I went, because I said I enjoyed chopping cotton, so don't listen to me. But I can tell you the very first experience I had when I moved into my dorm at Pumphrey Hall was I moved in and there was a white girl there. And, you know, I'm from Southeast Arkansas. You speak and smile and all of that. And she looked really strange, and I left out and came back. She was on the phone, and a day or so later, she told me that her mother said she had to move out because she couldn't stay in my room. So that was my introduction to dorm life here. But overall, the students were accepting. Most of them, I think, had probably experienced integration by the time I got here in 71, and, you know, accepted us. There were friendships between whites and blacks during that time. I did belong. There was a black organization called BAD, Black Americans for Democracy.
I argued against that title. Yeah. The headline. Bad. I said, yeah. You don't get it.
And they were very active during the time. But I have to say that just as civil rights, just as we've all stood on the shoulders of people who've worked or fought in the mm-hmm. trenches, by the time I got here, there were people who had suffered a lot to make sure that people like me were able to enjoy my experience at the university. So I really didn't get the brunt of a lot of things that people like Silas Hunt and people after him even experienced. And also, there was a close group. There wasn't as many as there are now, African Americans. So we did just about know, even though we had about twice as many as you did, everybody knew each other. So there was that sense of security because we all knew each other.
Janice Kearney is the author of the book Daisy, Between a Rock and a Hard Place. We also heard from Gerald Jordan, a professor of journalism at the University of Arkansas. They made their comments during a forum last month at the University of Arkansas Library, the forum dedicated to the life of Daisy Bates and the coverage of civil rights in Arkansas. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large.
This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
It is time once again for our Sunday morning montage.
And inspiration comes from a writer.
A writer, yes. Theodore Geisel.
Yeah, also known as Dr. Seuss.
Also known as Dr. Seuss. Today is his birthday. Would have been
right.
His birthday. I know a lot of kids grew up and still do grow up with Dr. Seuss. I was in Target and in the book aisle, mm-hmm. and there's just an entire section of Dr. Seuss books.
The Lorax, Horton Hears a Who.
One fish, two fish, blue fish, red fish.
That's his as well?
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, The Grinch Who Stole Christmas.
One
All
of my
those.
Favorites, yeah.
So you were inspired?
I was inspired.
Well, let's listen.
Enjoying the jungle's great joys, when Horton the elephant heard a small noise.
To go on an outing.
What wonderful weather to run around shouting.
What wonderful weather for love to be sprouting.
It's mighty fine weather. I hope that it stays.
What glorious weather for zipping and zooming.
What glorious weather for hearts to be blooming.
What glorious weather for briding and grooming.
It's mighty fine weather we're having these days.
do, just go right along. You'll start happening, too. Oh, the places you'll go. You'll be on your way up. You'll be seeing great sights. You'll join the high flyers who soar to high heights. You won't lag behind.
Welcome, welcome, Babu Lamus.
Welcome, welcome, Babu Lamus.
Christmas Day is in our grasp. So long as we have hands to clasp.
I speak for the trees have no tongues. And I'm asking you, sir, at the top of my lungs, that thing, that horrible thing that I see, what's that thing you've made out of my truffula tree?
Look, Lorax, calm down. There's no cause for alarm. I chopped down just one tree.
French, chat chapeau. In Spanish, el gato in a sombrero. And I'll tell you something more. Now you listen to me good. In German, I'm a Katze und das ist meine Hut. Ist das nicht ein Katzerhut?
Ja, das ist ein Katzerhut.
Holiday season while we was young, growing up, everything be cool and Mr. Grinch show up. Always plotting and scheming to ruin everybody. Holiday season and never had a justifiable reason.
L.B., I am a bean and they call me the Grinch. I tried to live with the given, but it was making me winch. I've seen happy kids with gifts, Merry Christmas, they shouted. I stole the gifts and there was nothing anyone could do about it.
To see how you did on our Sunday morning montage, just go to OzarksAtLarge.com.
It has been a long and frigid winter, but they say soon things will warm and avid hikers will hit the Ozark trails. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich takes us on the Ozarks Highlands Trail to meet a cartographer who's mapping it.
I'm Christian Underwood, owner of Underwood Geographics.
Christian Underwood moved to the Ozarks 10 years ago with his spouse, Elizabeth, to pursue a master's in geography at the University of Arkansas, which completed in 2009. The couple loved it so much, they stayed, purchasing a small parcel in Winslow. That's where, in 2011, Christian opened his firm, and he's undertaken a most ambitious project, mapping the Ozark Highlands Trail.
We're at the start of it here at Lake Fort Smith State Park, and the trail does stretch almost all the way to the Missouri borderline, where it'll meet up with the Ozark Trail in Missouri and hopefully stretch all the way to St. Louis. So it'll be a trans-Ozark Trail from Lake Fort Smith State Park to St. Louis, Missouri.
The Ozark Highlands Trail is worn and well-blazed, he said, but it penetrates some of the most wild and rugged territory in the state.
There's a series of Forest Service maps that have been out since the 1990s, and they have not been updated since the 1990s. And unfortunately, due to budget cuts, the Forest Service doesn't have the revenue to update their maps.
Noted Ozarks wilderness photographer Tim Ernst published a guidebook on the Ozark Highlands Trail, which notes many features, but Christian's maps will be based on state-of-the-art GPS coordinates.
Well, the equipment that I use is a Trimble GPS or a differential GPS unit, so it's a highly accurate piece of equipment. It's kind of a field computer, and it gets great reception down in the hollows.
Using the handheld devices, he's able to take constant readings and note features along the way, working in 7 to 10 mile increments.
And then if I come across something interesting, I'll take a waypoint, a specific location. And this unit allows me to make notes as I'm collecting this waypoint. So I can say, oh, this is a waterfall, or this is a beautiful cave, or this is an old homestead.
Mapping human traces is Christian's undergraduate degree in anthropology.
As an archaeologist, and when you're doing archaeology, you're digging and you're also mapping about every 10 centimeters. You have to make a map because once you dig up a feature, it's no longer there. So you have to continuously document it with photographs and maps. And I really enjoyed making the maps. It was fun. And it eventually landed me a job mapping and surveying all the caves on a Fort Leonard Wood military installation.
Which introduced him to the karsty Ozarks and got him hooked on cartography mapmaking. His first job was in North Carolina, where his wife was taking her master's.
To map the Bartram Trail in western North Carolina. It stretches from the Chattooga River in South Carolina, Georgia, all the way up to the Appalachian Trail. The section in North Carolina where I mapped is about 84 miles long.
Christian had been hiking the Ozark Highlands National Recreation Trail for some time on his own and had been mapping certain features. That's when he decided to pitch the concept of a map to the Trail Association, which is responsible for constructing and maintaining it.
And they loved the idea. I mean, they wanted a map of it as well. So we're just in the process of raising funds. I mean, it's more them in the process of soliciting funds from, it might be cities or private businesses, wherever it may be, but get the to raise the funds to pay for the cartographic work and the printing. The printing is not an inexpensive process. It does cost money to get those large maps printed and folded on waterproof, tear-proof paper.
Christian's collected data on 150 of 218 constructed miles of trail so far. The total length is 256 miles, with the northern route crossing the White River at Norfolk Lake into Missouri. John Pennington serves as vice president of the Ozark Highlands Trail Association.
So we are very excited to be working with Underwood Geographics to have a series of new maps created for the Highlands Trail that can aid in a hiker's enjoyment of the trail, increase tourism to the cities and counties that the trail is located near, and then also to help us maintain the trail as we go through time.
Christian Underwood's mapped turf is expanding. He's mapped the Shawnee National Forest Trail in southern Illinois, as well as other trails in western North Carolina. And his work has other applications.
Yes, so I do make maps and graphics for authors of books, for professors. So I've worked a lot with University of Arkansas professors in Oaxaca, Mexico, and the Nez Perce battles in Idaho and Montana. Surprisingly enough, we do a lot of mapping of statistical data, visualizing statistical data. So you're not looking at numbers or columns and rows of numbers. You can get something and synthesize the data and understand what the data are saying in a matter of seconds rather than trying to crunch numbers.
Infographics. Think weather maps. Underwood, who is 37, tall and skinny, spends his free time hiking with his wife Elizabeth, who is Executive Director of Governmental and Community Affairs at UA Fort Smith. So far, they've tackled several dozen states. But he spends springs on whitewater. Last year, he combined both passions, mapping while paddling the Mulberry River. He's remapping the whitewater section for local outfitter Brad Wimberly, who operates Turner Bend. The USGS has stream maps, he says, but the river course has changed due to recent massive flooding.
It's a wild and scenic river. It depends if you look at the Little Mulberry or the Mulberry. It starts in either Fallsville or Red Star, Arkansas, and it makes its way, it more or less travels due west and makes its way all the way to the Arkansas River just south of the town of Mulberry, Arkansas.
Using his GPS equipment, Christian's mapped 64 miles of the river.
It took me about 2 months to collect the data, and it's not every day that I was out there, but over the course of 2 months, I was able to collect all the data. So running a five-mile section one day, and maybe next weekend I'd run another five-mile section or maybe a 10-mile section, just depending on the length of day. We had a nice wet fall, which is kind of abnormal for Arkansas, and that afforded me the opportunity to get out more frequently, and the days were longer, so I could stay out longer.
Maps being printed by Vision Graphics, based in Colorado, which prints all of National Geographic's maps, by the way.
The final product is going to be a typical topographic map that hikers use, kind of similar to the one of the Buffalo National River, the ones that Trails Illustrated has put out. So it's going to be a folded map. It's going to be on waterproof, tear-proof paper. But it's really interesting right there, so you do get to see some neat faults. And it's interesting how on the north side of the river you have the Ozark Plateau, and on the south you're really getting into that Arkoma Basin.
The Mulberry River map should be available mid-March, just in time for spring floating. And the Ozark Highlands Trail map, it will be a folio of three maps, the first section scheduled for completion this fall. And recreational cartographer Christian Underwood has already set his sights on his next project, mapping the Ouachita Trail. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
To learn more, visit ugeographics.com.
On the next Fresh Air Weekend, we discuss the big questions of the universe with astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson. He hosts the new science mini-series Cosmos, a space-time odyssey. Also, how one investigative reporter tried to keep her personal data private but still function in the modern online world. It wasn't easy. We talk with Julia Angwin about her new book, Dragnet Nation. Join us.
Listen to Fresh Air Weekend this evening at 6 on 91.3 FM.
Hinesville, Arkansas, population 75, surrounds old Highway 412. As you drive north, you'll pass an antique store on your left. To the right, an Arvest loan office. And just next door to that is the Ponderosa Valley Inn Cafe. Engraved in the rock above the door is the date of construction of that building, 1933. It has been many things, from a feed store to a grocery, but as far back as I can remember, that's about 30 years, it's been the Valley Inn Cafe. The recession made times tough for everyone, but especially those running a business in a rural town, and the Valley Inn closed in 2010. Last June, Sharon Evans, along with her husband, reopened the Valley Inn in an effort to revitalize the community.
And try to bring revenue into the community because it's kind of died down because of the bypass. So we decided we would redo it and open it up and see what we could do with it. So that's where we're at right now.
The bypass she's referring to is a new 412. It takes travelers around Hinesville rather than through it. Many of the diners come from areas far and wide, like Bella Vista, Red Star. And last week, they had a visitor from Romania. Growing up out Highway 45 east of Fayetteville, I stopped in for the famous pie when traveling to Eureka Springs. When the remodeling began in the beginning of 2013, there was much anticipation for the restaurant's opening.
When we were working on it, people would come by every day. How long is it going to be before you open? You know, there's actually apartments in the top of the valley here. And so we actually fixed one of the apartments already for rent, and then we'll have two more eventually.
Serving home-cooked cafe-style meals, Sharon bought the business from her niece. And being from Lowell rather than Hinesville, she had to call in reinforcements when asked about the history of the building and the Valley Inn.
Now, I'll tell you, somebody that can tell you the whole history of the valley is A.T. Smith. And he knows everything about it, when it was and what year it was. I can actually check and see if he could come over.
Yeah.
Because across the street.
The general store?
Yeah, yeah. Hey, you got a minute to talk to a reporter and give her the history of the valley? All right. Well, no, you come over here. She's going to talk to Lila, too.
A.T. Smith was born and raised in Hinesville and owns and runs the general store. It's across the street from the valley and up a little ways. He primarily uses the space for an office these days, but still sells fertilizer and feed. I asked A.T. if he had always had the general store.
Well, always since 1956. I bought the store in June of 56. My brother owned it 4 years before that, and Connor Mayfield owned it 28 years before that, and that was Limebarger's Dry Goods across the street there, the next door. And Connor had dry goods, and he didn't have many. He had some groceries, but not a lot, but Buck had the groceries over here.
A.T.'s great-great-grandfather was a man named Jimmy Schmidt from a small town in Germany.
And he came to New York, and he had a son, 11-year-old boy named Andy. Andy migrated to Kentucky and married Abigail Hines. Her brother was John Hines, and John Hines owned this land here. And they came here in 1828 in a covered wagon. Along about the same time, the Fitches and the Vaughns came in.
You can still see signs that say Fitch or Vaughn when in Hinesville. A.T. says this is the best farming land in Madison County, and that the bank, formerly the Valley Bank and Loan, plus the Valley Inn Cafe, were both named after the beautiful long valley Hinesville rests in. As long as he can remember, there has always been a restaurant in the town.
Oh, yes. The post office is over across the street. Of course, I changed the front in that building. The side shed over on the right was originally put on there for a restaurant or a cafe. And at one time, there used to be a garage right down here, and on this side of it was an old tin building. You remember the tin that was checked about 6 inches square everywhere? It had it on the ceilings and on the walls and everything. That was a cafe, and that got moved out to my farm. It's still out there, and it's on my farm now. It's just an I took the bottom was rotted out of it, so we just wired across with wire and poured concrete up. It's still there.
The Valley Inn Cafe has had many different owners over the years, but has been in this location for several decades. The apartments above the restaurant we mentioned earlier were, according to our local historian, A.T., used to store horses and buggies and plows.
Originally, it had an elevator back here that they pulled up with ropes, and upstairs they kept wagons, plows, everything, all kinds of hardware and stuff like that. And then Buck Vaughn wound up with Jim's dad, and he ran it, you might say, my lifetime until he sold out. And then Frank Fetters and Mildred ran it for a long time. I don't know, there may have been somebody in between, but then Shipley, I can't remember what his first name was. He ran it with the last one that had a store that I remember here.
A.T. says he never was good with names, and now more than ever, he isn't. The Valley was opened by Lloyd Lewis's wife, who needed income after Lloyd died. Not long after, she herself had a heart attack, and her daughter, Sharon, took over for a few years, leaving the Valley to be purchased by Pat and Jim Vaughn, who ran it for 18 years. You know those famous pies? The ones with the tall, light brown meringue perfectly formed atop coconut or banana cream? Those are still made by Lila Ruth Rolls, who helped make the pies with the Vaughns all those years ago.
Pat's mother, she did a lot of the, made the crust, and Patsy would make the filling. And then when I came in, well, a lot of the time, you know, I put a lot of them in. Dolores Pascal put them together.
As I stared at two beautiful pies cooling on the counter, one lemon, one coconut, I had to ask Lila about her secret to a perfect meringue.
Well, I sprinkle a little bit of salt and put cream of tartar in it. The salt takes up the moisture. And I whip them, and I don't put a whole lot of sugar.
Jackie Carter does the cafe-style cooking, though she wouldn't give her secret for the meatloaf you can get each Thursday. It's a family-like place, and you can make a request, and she'll most likely fulfill it. The Valley Inn looks a lot like I remember it, with a nickel Coke machine and a long counter with wooden tables around. But owner Sharon Evans says much effort was put into its rebirth. In an effort to further keep the community together, the walls of the second and larger room of the cafe have been sponsored by or decorated by members of the area.
This is the crossbow wall that we actually have, and Patsy Vaughn actually was a Boette in the picture here. The center picture was actually taken by Dr. Tom Coker, who's no longer with us. I can't remember the year he passed away, but his sons are both orthopedic physicians in Fayetteville.
Resident Cornelia Davis has sponsored a wall in honor of her kids who are ropers. Barnes Forest State Auction has a portion. The end wall belongs to Sharon's niece, a rodeo girl. The Springdale Fraternal Order of Police is a supporter and has a wall. All the frames in the room were made by a close friend. And on the back wall, resting on an old antique organ, are pictures of old Hinesville.
The old Ellenberger family home, the old post office, the Copeland house. Then these are actually some of the old houses that actually belonged here in Hinesville. There's the Fetter Grocery. And that picture there was Hinesville before 1900. And then the picture on the side.
Incorporated decades ago in order to secure a gas line, Hinesville currently has a mayor. A.T. Smith says that without successful business and a restaurant, the town may not last.
I run a store, and Jim Vaughn's got an antique store, and they pulled the bank out. It's a loan office now in the Valley Inn. And I was talking to Don Anderson the other day. He had cancer. And I said, hey, we can't all die. Hinesville will blow up and blow away. And that's about right. When we're gone, that'll probably be it.
The Valley Inn's winter hours are Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday from 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. And Saturdays from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. On Saturday nights, you can get catfish. Come summer, they hope to be open every day. You can find them on Facebook at Ponderosa Valley Inn. This is Ozarks at Large.
It is Sunday, March 2nd, 2014. This is Ozarks. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
It might not be as big an announcement as the football recruiting class.
Or it could be.
Or it could be. I have juicy details about what's on the Walton Arts Center Broadway season for next year.
I think they're of equal importance. And I'm a sports fan, but I'm also an arts fan. So here we go.
All right. So here we go. The season starts with Nice Work If You Can Get It. It's a collection of Ira and George Gershwin songs turned into a musical.
Well, it's got a good pedigree then, doesn't it?
There you go.
Yes.
It ran on Broadway from April 2012 to June 2013 with Matthew Broderick as a wealthy playboy who falls in love with a bootlegger, set in the Roaring Twenties, obviously.
Right.
And it's got songs like Nice Work If You Can Get It, obviously Fascinating Rhythm, I've Got a Crush on You. And the run starts at the Walton Arts Center on October 28th.
Okay.
It's the first national tour of the show.
Ah, fun.
Next on the season in January, so there's kind of a gap there.
Oh, yeah.
It's called Slava's Snow Show.
Okay, you're going to have to fill me in.
Nobody at my office knew anything about it either. It's created by a Russian-born actor, mime, named Slava Polonin. And it features a clown that he describes as a mix of Marcel Marceau's mimery and the comedy of Charlie Chaplin.
Okay.
And the show follows him silently through a whirlwind of lights and blowing snow.
I got to tell you, I'm very intrigued by this. This sounds like it could be quite interesting.
They've called it a blend of Cirque du Soleil and Blue Man Group.
Okay.
So there you go. That's in January. In February of next year, Camelot. I love Camelot. And if the, I don't know if it's a picture of the king or of Lancelot, but whatever photo we ran on the front of What's Up, yeah, if he looks like that, I'm all in. I'm good.
I think when I think Camelot, I still think Richard Harris and
that Franco
line.
Nero, yeah, and exactly. Vanessa Redgrave.
Right.
I do too. But it should be wonderful. In March of next year, Andrew Lloyd Webber and Tim Burton's Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat.
Now, that's been at Walton Arts Center before, has it not?
It has. I seem to recall that Joseph got knocked unconscious by a piece of scenery
the
night I was there.
Oh,
they had flying parts of the set, and he ran smack dab into a cloud, and the next time Joseph came out, he was someone different.
Oh, wow.
And they handled it flawlessly. Flawlessly. Other than the fact that he was a different person, nobody did anything.
Wow.
It was amazing. I'm not promising that'll happen this
time. I hope it does not.
But it was very exciting. The season closes with Once, which is based on the film. Two musicians called Guy and Girl, and the stage version won 8 of the 11 Tony Awards it was nominated for.
Also, the film version won an Oscar for Best Song.
So there you go.
Best Original Song, yes.
Okay, season tickets are on sale now. Single tickets don't go on sale until the summer. So you might want to get on the Walton Arts Center website and figure out what you want to do.
And again, just to be clear, this is the season that begins in October 2014.
Correct.
This is not the season that we're in.
Correct.
Which will next have Chicago.
Correct.
Yes. Later this month.
Correct.
Okay.
Also this afternoon, if you're not confused about where you are, the One District, One Book celebration happens at Crystal Bridges from 1 to 4, and it is inspired by the children's book, The Fantastic Secret of Owen Jester.
And I will add this
disclaimer.
I will add this disclaimer. Always check when winter weather is a possibility to whether anything we're talking about in the immediate future happens.
Absolutely.
Call first. Go ahead. Sorry.
We have a show at the First United Methodist Church of Bella Vista this afternoon, called Distinctively Archipella, featuring the Northwest Arkansas Archipella Show Chorus and Distinction, a show chorus from Las Vegas doing Sweet Adeline's music.
Okay.
That's at 3 o'clock and tickets are $15. And tonight's Speak for Yourself at Maxine's Taproom in Fayetteville is the Arkansas Traveler Show at 7 o'clock.
That's at Maxine's.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That sounds like a full Sunday.
You should be able to keep busy.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
The last wolf in Yellowstone National Park was killed in 1926.
For any visitor that had come to Yellowstone from 1926 to 1995, when wolves were brought back, there's one thing that they missed out on. There would have been an unnatural silence here.
Now you can hear the wolves again. I'm Steve Kerwood, and that's next time on Living on Earth from PRI.
Living on Earth begins today at 5 on 91.3 FM.
This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
This week I had the pleasure of talking to Dave Baer.
Singer-songwriter.
That's right. Lives near Ponca in Newton County and had never been on the show before. Has released 3 CDs.
Really?
Yeah. And we heard a couple of songs from him on the Friday edition of our daily program. I asked him if he could play one while he was here in the Furman Garner Performance Studio for the Sunday show as well. And he really sat there for a second and said, Sunday, what's a Sunday kind of sound? I said, well, and this was Wednesday, I think, when we talked, Tuesday or Wednesday. And I said, well, Sunday, the forecast right now looks like it might be sort of
icy,
snowy, cold, not a sunny day. And so he thought about it and he said, I've got the song for you. And so this is the song he recorded specifically for you on Sunday morning. It's called Caught in the Middle.
Dogs barking, angels harking, find myself caught in the middle. Back and forth we go, back and forth we go, over and over and over again. This me market, this neon glowing target, it's all I can do to sit on my stand in the trees. When will I learn? Will I learn to obey this old soul? No. Do what we love, we slave for it. Pick the fruit of our labors, get paid for it. We do what we love, we slave for it. Fruit of our labors get paid for it. From the cold, splitting timbers, putting sticks on the stove, waiting for nothing, watching the trees grow. The train comes, but we don't go. Through the wash right, through the fields, we'll dance with the scarecrow, the wind at our heels. Moon in your eyes, and the sun in mine. Though it's all been done, we'll pay no mind. No. No. Do what we love, we slave for it. Get the fruit of our labors, get paid for it. Do what we love, we slave for it. Get the fruit of our labors, get paid for it. We do.
That's Dave Baer inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. The song Caught in the Middle, you can find him and his music on his Reverb Nation page. Dave Baer, B-A-E-R.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Mansfield.
Mansfield. And tonight, the Oscars.
I know. I'm looking forward to them.
A little bit later than they've been the past few years because they didn't want to conflict with the Winter Olympics.
I thought they were later.
Yeah. Used to, way back when, they used to be in April. But 9 movies, I think, are nominated for Best Picture.
Quite a few, yeah.
And
I've tried to watch all of them, but I think I'm still missing Philomena.
Okay, so you've seen all
see
the others.
I've seen all the others.
If you had a ballot and you were picking Best Picture out of the ones you've seen, leaving Philomena out of it because it might be the best movie ever, but of the ones you've seen, what would you select?
12 Years a Slave was pretty good.
Yeah, that's what I've...
Yeah, but Dallas Buyers Club, that's one that I would watch, like I would watch again, for sure.
With Matthew McConaughey.
Mm-hmm, and Jared Leto.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really liked it.
I wonder if, I should know this, but I don't, I wonder if anyone has ever won a Golden Globe, an Oscar, and an Emmy in the same calendar year. Because Matthew McConaughey has a real good chance.
He
won the Golden Globe for Dallas Buyers Club. He is considered to be, if not the favorite, one of the strong favorites to win Best Actor. And then, you know, True Detective.
It's a pretty good show, too.
It is, and he might get, he certainly will be nominated for the Emmy for that. I've seen 2 or 3 of the movies. I saw Her, which I really enjoyed. American Hustle, which was...
But you haven't seen enough to pick a favorite, really, out of the 9 top?
Yeah. I haven't, so. Yeah. All right, but I'll be watching, of course.
I will be, too. All probably.
As long as we have power.
As long as we have power, that's right. Probably be making some chili to curl up on the couch with on this chilly evening.
Antoinette Grajeda has the show tomorrow.
She does.
And thanks so much for listening. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
My dear, I'm safe.